Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
Today's guest is Mark Victor Hansen, co-creator of Chicken Soup for the Soul, one of the most successful publishing franchise of all time. He spent decades helping people turn ideas into impact, and he's lived what most people only talk about, facing massive rejection for massive success. Mark, I'm just going to start with success. And, you know, I'm not going to start with success. I want to start with rejection. Now, you were rejected 144 times before Chicken Soup for the Soul became a phenomenon. You know, what people, you know, usually people quit like after five times, you know, people just get frustrated and they don't move forward. You know, what do successful people understand about rejection that the average person doesn't?
First of all, it's a great question. And yes, we have turned down 144 times. The joke is that they didn't like Jack, but that's not true. True is, I've been selling since I was 9 years old. And my mother taught me a clean four-letter word, N-E-X-T, which next. And what we knew is that we were putting this together. We had the story's got standing ovations. We pre-sold 20,000 orders because after all those rejections, we went to BEA, Book Expo America, 60,000 people. Again, we get turned on. The third day we're there, it's at Anaheim Convention Center. And a little publisher, Gary Seidler, and they're down in Florida in Deerfield Beach. And Peter Vegzo, Gary said, I cried all over my silk shirt. I'll do it if you'll buy 20,000 copies at $6 each. Well, then we had to sign up for $120,000 indebtedness, which we did not tell our respective wives, because you want to get home, that'd be like, you want to die? I'm glad you're laughing, because they never knew. And people said, well, you didn't have, I've got the stacks of rejection in my file, so I can show them. Because they come as pink slips saying, Random House doesn't think this book's worthy. And later on, they give me $1 million to write 1 Minute Millionaire. So, you know, it all good in the neighborhood, so to speak, but it was
right.
It was a tough slug, but I knew that somebody was going to buy it. Somebody's going to take it. And then, you know, you can't beat, we've done over 500 million books, half billion books. We'll hit a billion just because we still got momentum. We're still going up. I'm still in the book business 100% at 78 years young and going to 127th options for renewal and is more excited about it now than ever. Now we're going into movie business also. So we got a lot of cool stuff happening that, because you got to hang in there tough, everybody. So in answer to your question, the advice to everyone is understand that you've got to be bigger than the rejection. You've got to be stronger than the rejection. And they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting their small-mindedness against you or their limiting beliefs, because everyone's got filters, and their filters were you're nobody from nowhere and you didn't do anything yet. Well, everybody is nobody before they become somebody, but you got to be somebody yourself. You got to have self-identity that is so strong it is invincible against the odds, because the odds are against every one of us at the front end. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you're good looking, tall, short, fat, black, thin, white, red, yellow, whatever, right?
Right.
Was that too long an answer?
No, that was a wonderful answer, because, you know, so many people have these great ideas and they try a few times, they get rejected, they get discouraged, and then they just say, you know what, it's not going to work. You know, so that was a great answer, because you really, you know, look where you are right now. You know, you didn't give up, you stayed persistent, you followed, you know, your gut, you followed your dream. And you accomplish, you know, exactly what you wanted to accomplish. And you didn't tell your wives, but we'll talk about that another day.
Both for Jack and Mark, it's their ex. So, you know, but they're sure happy with the proceeds once we sucked it in, toughed it out, and handled it. But I want to go to the first thing you said. All spiritual literature says the same thing. Do not bury your talent. Now, they do different words and different exegesis, but the same thing is it doesn't matter whether it's a song, a book, a business, a spouse, a relationship. you know, whatever the is, you, every one of us is born with this great colossal talent. And obviously I write money books too. And I say, look, all you got to do to make a fortune is find a problem, solve it, scale it, and then make a vast profit. And obviously I've done that a couple of times, four times in my life, and I'm in the fourth one right now. So, and that's where the fun in life is, doing what you're uniquely positioned to do. And let me go to the sidebar on that. My wife and I, Crystal, who's I call the goddess of exquisiteness, have watched the movies on near-death experience. We're writing a book now that I'll tell you about if you want to hear that. Such a story, you can't believe. The guy was dead 28 days, brain dead, and came back, which is a story you'll love in a second. But everyone goes to whatever they perceive as the other side.
Right.
100% of them that came back, the 20,000, say one thing only. He said, you weren't done. In other words, no matter whether you're Jewish or Christian or whatever else, Islam, Hindi, whatever, every one of them comes back and they say, the big guy said, you signed up for an agreement to do something here, right? Yeah. I don't know what your agreement is. I know what my agreement is. I'm supposed to, you know, do four things I can do. I really am lucky that I found that I can speak, that I can write, I can promote. And then I see the holes in other people's business that they can't see, because the line is, many have eyes and cannot see. They got on blinders from their self prescribed filters, and they could have got them when they were born. They could have got them from their parents, the military, school, whatever, friends. I don't care. The point is, your job and mine is to take off blinders.
Yeah. You know, I've heard that many times. Many times, you know, people have passed and they are brought back to life. And the one thing that they do here, just like you said, is that their journey wasn't completed and they go back, because there is a journey, there is a purpose, there is a reason why they are here. And if that reason and that purpose is not fulfilled, they come back, you know. And I've heard that over and over and over again by many, myself also.
Yeah. No, so the question you got to ask yourself, and Crystal and I wrote that great book called Ask, The Bridge from Your Dreams to Your Destiny, which I think I have a copy by me right there. Ta-da. Anyhow, what we say is, look, there's only three asks. You got to ask yourself, ask others, and ask God. And it goes with a sign behind you, our story, but our story's got to be shared so it becomes their story, because every story helps somebody else's story. In other words, I'm sure you've been to Florence and you see the great David sculpture, and they say, Michelangelo, how you make it David? You say, I chippy out everything, not David. You got to chippy out what all the stuff is not. You go to school, you get a job, you work. No, that isn't it. I'm here. I get goosebumps telling you this. I don't know why. That revelation of truth. It means you're here to make your story, and our home. And our home, I'm going to do metaphorically, the whole earth, because we only know how to live on earth as humanoids. Although I believe there's probably other species and other, I mean, the universe is 15 billion years old.
Yeah.
And we can find him thanks to Elon Musk. He's good.
You know, let's talk about what's happening for people listening right now. They're not failing because they're not incapable. They're failing because they're discouraged, because they get rejected, and it means something to them. And, you know, so when people get, you know, rejection hits, what is the most common lie people tell themselves?
I understand. The lie is that I'm not worthy. And the first seven things we cover in the Ask book is that you've got to keep telling yourself, I'm worthy and that I'm enough. I'm tall enough, short enough, fat enough, thin enough, whatever it is, the enough is. But then that I am worthy and I am capable of accomplishing this. Because I've never said this before, but I remember when I was starting to write books and start to really sell, I went to a high school class reunion. This is in prehistoric days. Remember that I graduated high school 55 years ago or something. Anyhow, so... It's fascinating. They said, hell, if you can write a book, anyone could write a book. And then I'd only sold the first book I wrote, because everyone said, you're the best storyteller, you ought to write a book. And I sold 20,000 copies from little life insurance offices of 6 or 10 or 12. And I was doing four, only Tony Robbins and I are nuts. We did four meetings a day in our respective businesses. But I was back in New York. And you know, in New York, because you live there and in Florida, the joke is, in New York, they eat their young. If you're not delivering something that they want to hear, they'll eat you and tell you, I'm not hiring you. But luckily, the life insurance business not only ate me up, but I said, look, it's not a New York Times bestseller. It's not available anymore. Not a New York Times bestseller, not a national bestseller, but it's my bestseller. And I want to sign it to you and your spouse and your kids and your dog if you have one. And it was just, for me, it was a fun thing. And I was pumped up and they got pumped up and they started making a lot of money and I kept raising my fee and they kept paying it. So it was really great times for me.
Oh, that's an awesome story. I love it. I love it. Now, what did rejection mean to you early on? Like, and what does it mean to you now?
Well, first of all, I think you got to keep telling yourself back to I'm worthy. But the second line is I'm rejection proof. In other words, what you think of me is none of my business. And if because you don't want my seminar or my book or my business or my the product, service or ideas that I'm selling doesn't mean that it's not worthy. It is. You've got to keep it pedestalized in your mind. And you've got the other thing you got to do, the subset of that, number three would be you've got to input positivity on a full-time basis because the world is negative. The world is out to pummel you and make you less than. And I'm saying mentally, all of us, back to what you said a minute so articulately, Stacy, is we're all more than. We're born with 18 billion brain cells, but they can't come to work until you've got it as a dominating thought. And teleologically, I had written down, and we carried a little 3x5 card. We're going to sell 1.5 million in 1.5 years. And we sold 1.3 million. And then next year, I said, we'll sell 5 million. And you read it 4 times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and most importantly, before you go to sleep, because subconscious never sleeps. I know in New York, money never sleeps. Wall Street never sleeps, all that. But the subconscious doesn't sleep. That's why, I don't know if you've got any kids, but when you've got little kids, you know, you put guardrails on because your subconscious doesn't know you shouldn't roll out and smash your butt on the floor and hurt your head. Right. But by the time you're 2 or 3, theoretically, the subconscious goes, yo, baby, mama doesn't want me falling on the floor anymore. And by the way, we got grandkids now that can climb over the rails and go. So,
I raised 3 kids and each one of them was totally different than the other. But I had one daughter who was a climber. And if it was quiet in the house, you were in trouble. I remember one day finding her all the way on the top shelf and of the laundry room. And she was just sitting there looking at me with this big smirk on her face. And I was like, oh my God, here I'm climbing on top of the washing machine trying to get her. And it's like, yep, I know exactly what you mean. Their subconscious never stops working when they're sleeping and it doesn't stop. And they're on the go when they're awake.
I don't know what she's doing now, but if she was a climber before, think, metaphorize that to the world. Your whole life, all success, back to the first question you really started at, all success is uphill, right? So all life is a climb. It's a climb to find the right, it's a climb to find out who you are. It's a climb to find your spouse. Like when in our 20th anniversary issue, I wrote down 167 things. Now the editor edited it, me down to 112 of what I wanted, a perfect wife, right? Which is impossible. So, and I didn't expect it, but she's got to be happy, slender, radiantly fit, have a great personality, superb conversationalist. She cannot be a smoker because I'm not kissing an ashtray. It just wasn't. She can't be an alcoholic or a drug user. But I wrote down all these things in the 20th anniversary issue, and you can't believe how many people I wrote it down. And then when I saw her eminence or radiance. And I thought, wow. And like, I asked, is she married? No, she's divorced. I said, hot diggity dog. Anyhow, we were married a long time now, but it just, and we are a soul mated, bonded, in the Old Testament, it calls one flesh relationship, because that's really what you're supposed to go for. But if you don't write, if number one, you got to have the goal and answer to your bigger question. Number two, it's got to be in writing. It's not my law, it's spiritual law. And I don't care whether you're studying whomever, whether you want to study Deepak Chopra, who's a dear friend. Everybody's got to put it in writing because that brands it into the brain, etched into the fabric of your being. And then number three, you got to see it before you can have it, even though you say that doesn't make any sense. And then you got to get a team to get your dream, right? You got to mastermind it.
Exactly. Oh, that's great advice. And it's so true and right on the button. Now, when you got those no's, what kept you moving and not giving up?
Well, we'd set up like, oh, I didn't say this ever, so I'll say it now. Great question. All yours are great. But this question hits home run in a grand slam, because you got to have more obligations to go out and meet people, even though you don't, if you get a no, you've got to still have the next place to go on to, because then you can't, you know, you're going to run out of no's. That's the point. Because universe ultimately wants to say, in my opinion, wants to say yes to you, but you got to go through the no's so you get strong enough so when it happens, you can handle it.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes so much sense. You know what? Just like you have to strengthen your muscles, you have to strengthen your brain. And I've learned in life that the toughest things in life, whether it's mentally, with the nose or physically, when you didn't give up, when I didn't give up and I kept on going, my resilience just grew and grew and grew. My skin got thicker and thicker and thicker, and those no's didn't hurt me as much anymore, and it made me more resilient and more determined. No matter how many times I got a no or how many times I didn't get where I wanted to go, it only made me more resilient to keep on trying and to keep on building, that journey and that path to get that dream to be a reality.
Yeah, and that classic book, Think and Grow Rich, it's called persistence, and same thing. But you got to hang in tough. And what and answer your question, I knew, and now I'm a Horatio Alger Award winner myself. But at that time, Ross Perot was, and Ross Perot said I was the number one salesman at IBM, and then they wouldn't do what I wanted, so I started my own company, EDS, Electronic Data Systems. He said I knocked on 80 doors, 80 people said no. And the 81st person said yes and gave me a $4 million contract. So you divide 80
Wow.
to 4 million, I got paid $50,000 every time somebody said no. And I kept running that through my brain. And Jack said, what if it's more than 80? I said, well, I don't know how many it is. That's not the point. It was 144. But the two of us kept track, but we didn't tell anyone because, are you stupid? Nobody wants to hear the stories. Do you not get it? Random House knows what they're doing. They do $25 billion a year. You don't think they know? They do. Don't do, nobody's buying short stories. We weren't selling short stories. We were selling heart-touching, soul-penetrating stories, which I wrote that line, so I sort of like it.
I like it too.
Yeah,
What's
because
the
we want you to have goosebumps, God bumps, chili bumps, which in my language or spiritual language means you're hitting corroboration of truth. And obviously, the people read it, and crazy things happen. Like I got talked to 20,000 kids at Indiana State University, and the leaders, and it was amazing. The three that picked me up at the airport, little girls said, we wouldn't be in school if it weren't for your book. We read it and we want to go home and we miss mommy and daddy. And I go, when I went to school, I had to pay my own way through Sue. And I promised I couldn't go home. Dad said, look, if you're going to school and you're paying your own way, don't come home. I thought, wow, but it's kicking out of the nest, right? Which is
Yeah.
the eagle drops the eaglet from 2,000 feet and says, kiss, kiss, hug, hug. Hope you make it. Did you know they dropped them from that high? You got 2,000 feet, the little baby eagle, to figure out how to fly.
I didn't know that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I've been given eagles my whole life or something because they say you are one. So I say, okay, thank you.
Well, I think, you know what, when I think about it, even the way I was brought up, my parents always let me fall, but they were always behind me. They were watching over, but they always, I always, I had to pick myself up myself. And I think when the eagle drops you have no choice but to figure it out real quick because survival mode kicks in, and that's very different than just regular day on day trying to make practical decisions and so forth. And I that is pretty amazing.
Let's stay on that just for a second, and you may not want to, but we're at the first time that a lot of people that may be 40, 50, 60, or 70 are getting dropped, and it's the first time they've had to think. But here's the main point of what you just said, which is accurate. You knew there's a line to fall back on, and our government's been to fall back on for a lot of people for too long. For the first time, these people are going to have to think, and they're going to find out they got the enormous inner resources, not little. Enormous. You were born not endowed, over endowed with eight, whatever the real number is, 18 billion brain cells. There's no way I can count them, so I don't know. And you got three levels, right? That you got a physical level, which is what you're saying. Let's just take care of the food needs every day, and then you go to mental. And first of all, you go to brain. The school implodes all this stuff and says regurgitate out this information. We'll give you A's, and you're going to look really smart and good for you. That's not worthy. What's worthy is mind. Mind alone can think. And if you really, this morning I taught somebody the word exegesis, where there's four levels to a book. There's a physical book, then there's the words in the book, then the meaning superficially. But the real meaning is what do you figure out how to use those words in the parable, the story, to back to your thing, to make your story really worthwhile. And that's why all these people are getting metaphorically kicked out of the nest. Do you agree with that? I've never said that before either, but it seems accurate to me.
No, it definitely is accurate. You know, I think a lot of times people, especially when they're writing books, you know, you have a story in mind and you want to put it down just the way you think it is. And then you have to really think that there is, you have the cover, you know, and that's going to attract the people, but then you have the words in the book. And those words have to have value. They have to have meaning. They have to connect with other individuals. They, you know, I think from my own perspective, from working with so many people, they think about what is meaningful to them. But then you have to kind of open and get out of the box and say, okay, this is meaningful to me, but how is this going to be meaningful to the rest of society? How is this going to benefit them and change their lives? And then you've got it. That's when the change happens, and that's when your writing evolves, because it's not all about you. Now it's about everyone. It's about the world. It's about the mother eagle and the baby eagle and everybody all together. And that's when you develop a successful book in my eyes. What do you think?
Well, first of all, because of COVID, which was a hoax, as you probably know, we started our own publishing house because we went from 19,000 bookstores down to 400, which breaks my heart. I've never met a bookstore person I didn't like and wasn't nice and kind and thoughtful generally.
Yeah.
Same with a librarian. I've never met a librarian I didn't like. So, you know, I'm hurt that they got hurt. So
yeah.
Crystal, I said, look, we'll start Mark Victor Hansen Library. And last year we did 91 books. We're doing books that nobody else will publish.
Yeah. Like,
dude, this guy made $17 million in 1 year as a plumber. And isn't that a cute title, Fetching Millions by Tom
Hall? I like that.
Yeah. So, because we think, look, everybody can't go to college. You're obviously very smart. I'm sure you went to school a long time, maybe forever. But you and I both know, whether you went to school or not, lifelong learning is the transition. And so what we decided in our house, Ala, what your question was, number one, everything you write or do has got to be original. What is your imprimatur in this lifetime? I don't know what you're supposed to do or all the millions of people listening to us are supposed to do, but they know. And the way you know is you read our ass book and 100 times before you go to sleep is my destiny is, my destiny is, my destiny is. Or if you're in spiritual, you say, God in me knows my destiny. God in me knows my destiny. And that's what we did to come up with the title of Chicken Soup, Jack and his home in Santa Barbara, me at that time in Newport Beach. I now live here in Scottsdale. But we said mega best-selling title, mega best-selling title, mega best-selling title. Jack calls at 2:58 in the morning. This is 1989. And says, and by the way, my little daughter was becoming a veterinarian at the time. We had 88 animals on 1 acre, which is dumber than dumb. But four dogs start barking, chickens, 88 chickens, they go, going nuts. They weren't 88 chickens, but a lot of chickens and squawking. And they weren't happy because cell phones hadn't been invented. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, hey, cell phones always been here because it's been here since I was born. No. One, you got to be original. And Jack said chicken soup. And I said for the soul. And we both got goosebumps. And we still got turned down. So that doesn't necessarily matter. You could have the best title and New York doesn't quite get it. So number two, it's got to be original. Number two, it's got to be transformative to what you just said, the reader. Obviously, it's transformative to the writer, and that's why he or she wants to share their greatness. And then the third thing, it's got to be inevitable that, Stacy, you read this and you say, Mom, Dad, you got to read this. Husband, you got to read this. Kids, you got to read this. And that, you know, knock on wood, we test all our books first and make sure they work.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, let's get real for a minute. Like, everyone wants the result, but success has a cost. It's time, it's discomfort, it's uncertainty, it's, you know, looking foolish in public. You know, Mark, you've been at the top and you've also been at the bottom. My question to you is, what did building something that massive cost you personally that nobody talks about?
Again, another question I've never heard before, so I'm going to have to probe it originally. But first of all, let me just say success is worth the price you got to pay for it, but it takes enormous discipline. And you got to discipline yourself when the people are saying, you're nuts, and they're doubting you, and you go, they're supposed to be smarter than I am. We're talking about the chairman here of Random House or Time or nests or any, I name all the houses because I'm with eight houses because I've been prolific. I've written 328 books, 59 times number one, 2 billion at retail, 1 billion licensing. So
yeah.
I sort of know everybody now. And even knowing everybody, they don't always take what you got. So we now I own a publishing company. So not only do I take what I got, but I do all the stories that nobody else will take that I go, man, that story is going to kick butt. Like we just...
Yeah.
One of my best students for 40 years is a chiropractor. It's one of the four markets I worked in. And he sent me this little book called Proverbs. He extricated it from the Old Testament. And I said, holy cow, God's book of wisdom. I said, let me redo it. And he'd already been in 100 countries and four continents. And he said, and I talked to him this morning because we're finally ready to publish the book. And we've done an extraordinary cover. I define what wisdom is, not saying that I'm smart as Solomon. That would be... Boy, talk about pompous. But I wrote 21 lines on what wisdom is. Wisdom is timeless and all that stuff. So, and you know, so we got, it's really a more beautiful book. It was beautiful the way he did it. But, and he sold so many that I said, you get checks every month, but you're going to have to cut that one off and let us do it. The point is, it is transformative because even if you go to take a Bible, and I did do Chicken Soup for the Soul Bible, which a publisher wouldn't take, by the way. It said, Bible's already sold 7 billion. You're not going to sell that and nobody's going to take it. I said, let me write a little story in. He said, I won't take it. I said, good, sign this. I'm going to take it over to Thomas Nelson. And we ended up selling 70,000 a week at Walmart.
I
know I'm overdoing this answer, but you got to be stronger than your adversity, stronger than the people that are trying to defeat you, stronger than the people that are hitting you in the gut or knocking you out at the knees or saying, are you nuts? What makes you think you're going to spend our family money to do your crazy idea? And all of us got some crazy ideas. You have 50,000 a day, but you got to hone it down to the one that you know in your heart of hearts, in your soul, that this is going to come to magnificent and help people at levels nothing else help people. Mm-hmm. I give an example of that if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm sure you've been to BEA, Book Expo America, 60,000 show up, and we're the book of the year a couple of times. So we're there and you got to bring your books and give them out free to the bookstores because you sign your book and after you sign the book, like we did our money book, How to Make a Million in 90 Days, man, we had like 800 people in line and we're signing away and pretty soon you got to sign fast because they got the little chit and they go home and sell the book for $100 or $1,000, whatever they can get for an autographed copy. There's a lot of filabilias. That's a big word for people like me who collect autographs. I got it. 50,000 books and I'd say a quarter of them are autographed. Anyhow, guy comes up to me and said, you saved my country. Now I'm signing first, Jack signing next. He's on my right, I'm on the left. And the guy's telling me this and he says, and the guy behind me, you saved his life and you got to talk to him. I get goosebumps telling you this. I said, Jack, this is a real deal. Now there's like 700 people still in line wanting to get signed in an hour and then you're out and John Grisham or whoever takes your seat is in.
Right.
You've seen it. So guy says, every night we read your Chicken Soup of the Soul stories in Lebanon and you saved us against Syria. And the guy behind us had his limbs blown off and he just wants to kiss your cheeks because he can't hug you guys anymore. Is that okay? And Jack and I are crying and the people are going, what are these guys doing? Because they can't hear. We don't have any microphones. We got no PA.
Yeah.
Tell them, you all got to hear this story or we would have put them on a stage or something and had them talk. It happened so fast. And the point I'm making is not how great Mark and Jack are. The point is all of us are great. All of us, if we live our divine right destiny, whatever that is, your right livelihood, any words you want to put on it. And if you got better words, I'll listen to better words. The point is you have it. It'll exalt you and you're going to serve people you don't know because the greatest amongst you is servant of all. So who, how, and where do you want to serve? And everyone's got that. Even if they're, one of our daughters teaches special ed kids and she's finding the magnificence in some of these kids that can't find anything. And some of them are going to, when some people are watching, it's going to be way after the Winter Olympics, but one of her kids is in the Olympics. And yesterday we won against Canada, as you may know. So now we'll know the date of this show. And I know it's supposed to be evergreen, but the point is, America did it, and the leader even got his teeth knocked out by a Canadian because they didn't like that we were winning. And the guy says, look, I love America. I love my teammates. I love where we're going and what we're doing as a future. And what a strong kid. But he never, because he, I got to be careful with this because I don't know him, but educability if everyone's got a talent, not everyone has got an academic talent, which is the wrongness of our educational system concurrently. I want everyone to get an education. But if you're supposed to be in physicality, you know, there's eight forms. If you're supposed to be physical and kinetic, go do that and master that. Because if you really master it, you're going to have to learn all the rest. You're going to have to learn how to read about the Arnold Schwarzenegger and the top athlete in the Olympics and the top basketball player and the top ballerina. I mean, the coach for Michael Jordan made all those guys do ballet, you know, and you can see that he could jump, you know, 3 feet, 8 inches because he took ballet. Right. You'd go, I'm a basketball player. You want me to learn ballet? What are you doing? Right. It doesn't sound right, does it? Does that make sense?
That makes so much sense. 100%. I like that answer because, you know, not everybody is meant for the academics. You know, we all have that special quality, and it's that quality that we have to go after. It's that quality that brings us that, you know, that joy, that inner joy, that happiness. It makes us feel like we have a purpose. That's what we go after. That's what we do. And that doesn't always have to do with academics. So you're 100% on track. And I didn't know that Michael Jordan did ballet. So that was a little bit of a shocker for me, but it makes sense.
And so did Kobe. But the point is that I expect you did do ballet. My wife did. And I love dancing, but I'm a klutz. When I'm with her, she makes me look really good. Right. The point is, she could do that. I weigh 238 pounds, so it's ballet would not be my fort, right? Whereas bodybuilding is, and I was a top bicycle racer for a little while as a kid, so you know, because I really thought that was my coolion at the time. But I'm
right.
I bicycle a lot, once or twice a week, but it's not my right livelihood. I'm in my right livelihood. Doing this, I think, is my right livelihood. Based on the feedback I get, the people say, wow, you are really inspiring and you turned on my lights. Well, that's the point. We're doing a new podcast here, starting, we're doing all the stuff and call it in the can still, but which is old terminology, but, and it's going to be called, Own Your Light, because everyone's got light. And back to what you said, if you go into disappointment, if you go into rejection, if you go into disappointment, you're turning your lights off. It's like turning, I expect you got a bed, everybody's got a bed lamp almost next to their bed, right? And they turn it off. Goes out. But if you turn it on, it casts out all the dark out of the room. And I'm trying to get everyone to get turned on to whatever their greatness is. And by the way, while I say that, I also am a publisher. So I say, look, everyone's got a book in them and they got to do their story, because we are in a time of compounding stories. The world is where it is because we've compounded the stories. Silicon Valley is because they've decided to compound at a faster level. It's got some foibles. I'll do a big word on that. That's a nice word to say. But overall, it's really good.
I love that. Now, was there a moment you thought, this isn't going to work?
I got to go backwards. In school, luckily, I was at a university that hired Southern Illinois University hired everyone that got fired at Harvard, Wharton, Yale, Stanford, Cambridge, and I'm a graduate school, and we have all the best teachers. Now they're all post 65, because you may not remember, but back then that was ageism, right? You're over 65, adios. You're just getting good, right?
Yeah.
You just got enough experience to have real depth of soul, right? And luckily I was going to be a doctor of physiology. The head of physiology said, you got to go hear this guy, Dr. Buckminster Fuller, Einstein's best student at Princeton. And then Bucky invented lots of things, geodesic domes, Dymaxion cars, floating cities. I can go on and on, because I know I've mastered his 40 books and lived, worked for him with him for 7 years until I ended up hiring him to keep him afloat, because I'm really good at business and he was not good at business. I don't know that he would agree with what I just said, but that's how I see it. So everyone's got their own perception. And the good news about being a reader is it'll change your perception to a higher, lower, or sideways. So you get 360 degree view of your own self. So I went bankrupt in 1974 because I was trying to be Bucky rather than me. So I wanted to actually slash my wrist, and I'm sleeping in a sleeping bag in front of another guy's room in Hicksville, Long Island, New York. So you can see I was not styling and profiling. But the questions I said we teach and ask is ask yourself, others, and God. I said, okay, do you want me to just kill myself? Or what is the deal here? What do you want me to do? And God didn't do it that way. Didn't answer her from my point of view. He said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to talk to people that care about things that matter, make a life-changing difference. He said, basically, in my intuition was go do it. I go to breakfast the next day, three roommates. And I said, hey, any of you guys know anyone that's young so I can relate to them? Not a cotton top like me, not a Broadway star, a celebrity, a doctor, a lawyer. That's talking. And they said, yeah, there's kids 10 or 20 years older than you, but he's out in Hawpaw, Long Island, New York. I mean, you know where that is. So basically, and this kid is talking to 500 people. This is before microphones. So he is shouting to 500 people that are depressed, despondent, disconsolate, angry. And interest rate on real estate is 18%. So nothing in New York is selling. And Collins, who became my best friend and my mastermind partner, winds this audience up, shouting at him, laughing, joking, having fun for 3 hours. Yeah. At the end of which I go up to him and I say, I'm asking, I said, Chip, let me take you to lunch. He said, what do you want, kid? Because his voice all burned out. I said, I want to do what you do. He said, oh, kid, go get a real job. You'll never make it here. 1 in 1,000, you can make it. I said, no, let me determine that. And he, long story short, he told me what to say, what to do. And if I'd stay out of real estate, because he was helping Barbara Corcoran, who ended up becoming a billionaire, and you see her on Shark Tank, and you know, she and I are mentees of Chip. Anyhow, but he only wanted to work Long Island because he had two kids and a beautiful wife, Donna. And I said, okay, I'll. What do you want me? He said, life insurance is a bottomless pit for motivation. Call 10 people, one will say. I get to the 10th guy, 6:30 at night. There's nobody there but one long Cadillac, because this is when Cadillacs were bigger than Mercedes or Beamer. Yeah. Bentley's. And I go in and there's nobody there. I go to the guy's office and the guy is humongous. He is bigger than Santa Claus. How's that? In physical stature. And his name is Tony, and he couldn't have been lovelier. And we just had a Vulcan mind meld until about 8 o'clock at night, just talking. And I said, you know, I'm doing professional speaking and sales training. He said, good, I'll hire you. I said, good. Do you want to cut the check or have your secretary cut it? A line that Chip gave me. I'm a big boy, I'll cut the check. It wasn't very much. It was $25 seminar for four seminars, so $100. But it kept me alive. That was what's so cool. And then he ready to leave, and he says, hold on, kid. I said, what is it? He said, here's a directory. I'm the number one guy in the number one life insurance company in the whole world. At the time, Metropolitan and Pru were number one any given week. One sold one policy more than the other, whatever. I worked for both of them a lot, but... He said, here's a directory of all the other general managers and general agents. And you call them. If they don't hire you, you call me back and you tell me, and I'm going to tell them they got to hire you. You got it? I had a gold mine. That's why I could do four a day, right? I had, pretty soon I was telling them what time I'd come, and they had the meeting on my schedule. I was having a ball. I just, in answer to your question, so I went from depressed, despondent to... Now, at the time, we were listening to audio tapes. Today, you got to watch YouTube, whether it's mine or Tony Robbins or yours or Mel Robbins, whoever it is that winds your clock, Russell Brunt. Yeah. All these people and I are friends, like you and I are becoming friends now. Or the guy who introduced us, my neighbor here, Burnoff, Michael Burnoff, who's physically a giant and a master hockey player, by the way. We have the biggest hockey rink in America is right here in Scottsdale. And you go, the hell, this is it, the desert. What are we doing with a hockey rink? He says, I win because I'm 6'9". And when I put my arm out, they can't even get close to me.
That's pretty tall.
he is really cool and really tall and really smart. And been very kind. He introduced me to you. So I'm very thankful to our friend.
I am too. Now,
was that a good answer? Did that answer the question you asked?
Oh, 100%. Yes, yes. And I wanted to add to that question. So when Pete, you know, what do people romanticize about entrepreneurship that's actually brutal? Because a lot of times people want to go into entrepreneurship and they don't realize that, you know, it's not, you know, oh, I could work my own hours. I could do this. I could do that. But from your perspective and everything you've gone through, you know, what do you think, you know, about entrepreneurship that's actually brutal that people don't even realize?
It's brutal because you got to make it your magnificent obsession to succeed, because you're going to have nothing but pitfalls, breakdowns, upsets. And with a magnificent obsession, back to Chip Collins and I met every Friday night for dinner at 4 to 6 o'clock in somewhere in Nassau County, anyhow, Nassau and Suffolk border. I can't remember the place, but, and he said, you bring all your problems and all your, and he would transcend my problems because he'd had them. He was doing this 10 or 20 years and, yeah. and he'd look on my front and go, oh kid, just say this, do that. You'll get out of it. And it was just, I go, so all, and by the way, Michael sells consultancy. I by and large don't, I just sell books right now. And I consult during the books, but right. everybody needs an advisor. Everybody needs a mentor and you got to be the mentee and you want a mentor. As a matter of fact, you need more than one mentor. Here in our town is a guy who wrote How to Swim with Sharks, who makes $500 million a year with envelopes. The biggest envelope maker is Harvey McKay. He's 94. He just had a birthday and we all went to his party. He paid for 300 of us to get with Elton John. It was like, holy schmoly, we love this. And but Harvey's a good friend. I've endorsed him. I've been in a couple of his books. He's endorsed me. But Harvey has 32 mentors at 94 years old, I think he is now. And at 95, he said, now this will be the big party. This will have 1,000 at Mark. I said, I'm coming. Crystal and I'll be there. Can I bring my kids? Because his parties are really parties. And you know, he's done well. And that's part of the deal is you got to celebrate life. And he's celebrating his future before it happens and tells people, you're coming to my 95th, aren't you? I mean, like if Harvey called you right now, would you say yes or no?
Oh, I'd say yes.
Yeah, because you're going to be with literally the who's who of the world. And Harvey, he's also a Horatio Alger Award winner like I am. And we're close friends. We fly out together to Washington once a year to help 35,000 kids at risk to get into three things, academics, trade schools, or tech. And it's really a good organization. It's invisible unless you're applying for it. And I don't know how old your kids are, but if they're at the right age, they should apply for Horatio Alger. What? They're done.
I said they're all grown up. Yeah.
Good, good. You don't look old enough to have all grown, as they say in the South, grown up kids.
Well, I love you even more.
Good. But the point is that you got to have mentors your whole life. You say, no, I know everything. If you know everything, you're not the smartest person in the room. You're the dumbass in the room. And by the way, I'm being in high judgment because there are a lot of people that say, I know more than you. I say, okay, look at my results. Well, look at your results. Who's got better results? Because the only thing that shows up at the end is not how much academics you got, not your pedigrees, not your awards, because awards can be bought. Yeah. I've not bought any. I've just been given them, and I'm very thankful. And got a lot of them, actually, so I'm very thankful. But and sometimes undeserving, right? But very happy with everything that's happened in my life. I know I'm answering two questions at once, but I hope that made sense.
Oh, it makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. And I agree with you. You always need coaches. You always need people, you know, to help you along the way. And you can never have too many consultants or too many coaches. That's how you learn, you know, that's how you grow. That's how you get better at what you do. You know, nobody, like you said, nobody knows everything. And, you know, and people who've gone through it, understand it, have knowledge in it, have succeeded, you know, those are the people you want to be around. Those are the people you want to learn from. Those are the people that will help you grow, you know.
So, as I said, our little company, we started our own publishing company, markvictorhansonlibrary.com. We do three kinds of books. Our main goal is just do big biographies for the super rich, the billionaires and the centmillionaires, 100 millionaires. And we're doing one for the guy who's building the biggest project in America that I know of is $200 billion Taiwanese semiconductor plant. And it's here because their new chip is 1/80th the thickness of your hair, 1/80th the thickness. Now, why are they here? For three reasons. Number one, we don't have earthquakes in Arizona, so we're becoming the data capital of America. Number right. two, we have solar sun energy out right now, 300 days a year. Sorry, 360 days a year, only 5 days of rain. We're the desert. But number three, we do have water for the next 1,000 years because what happens is you've been to Arizona, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So they call it the valley, but it's surrounded like we're up in the top of a mountain here in McDowell Mountain. But the point is it rains up in the mountains, comes down, and we used to be the cotton capital of America. That's why the next city over from Phoenix is called Goodyear, because Goodyear made cotton tires. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah. Or not. But the point is One day the guys here in Arizona, this is generalized, but suggest, hey, wait a second, we don't want to be a cotton capital. We want to be a big, rich city because we got all these resources. We got 431 mines. We're the biggest copper. Hum, hum. I can go through all the benefits of Arizona. But they shunt the water out to a place called Buckeye, two-thirds bigger than Phoenix. And they say, we'll get rid of the water. And all you got to do is look at the map. The map, the water's got to go south. It's going to go to Mexico. We don't have to worry about it at all. Zero, nada. Well, that's not true because the water didn't go to Mexico because there's marble and granite that stopped the water. The water backed up. It's 8,000 feet deep. And this guy that we're doing a book with owns all that water and all that land. So we got water for the next 1,000 years and we can make the desert bloom, but we can also build all the data centers. And we're not going to be short of energy because in 1 year, he built 5 gigawatts of energy. Now, by the end of this year, 2026, we'll have 7. But America right now needs 100 gigawatts of energy to do the data centers, to keep my computer going, to keep the lights on. And nobody looked forward to that. Like,
yeah,
my hero Elon Musk says, we got plenty of chips, but we're not going to have enough energy by December. We're going to have started having blackouts. We don't need to have blackouts. We just need to, you know, make more solar panels and pull up more. And the regulation on mines has been pulled. So we're now going to have plenty of raw materials and all that cool stuff.
That's awesome. Now, yeah, chicken soup. Oh, go ahead.
No, sorry. I didn't mean to walk over you. Go ahead.
You didn't. No. I was just going to ask you, Chicken Soup for the Soul wasn't just a book. It became a movement. Like most people have ideas, but their ideas never leave their head. My question is, what turns a simple idea into something that spreads?
Okay, the line from Solomon is, without vision, people perish, correct? But what is your vision? How big can you make it? And I said, we did $2 billion at retail, but we did $1 billion in licensing because I'm an addict to biographies. That's why I try to help people write their biographies. People that succeed with a lot of money probably have had great ideas and breakthroughs and had breakdowns and caused the breakthrough. Anyhow, one weekend I'm reading Steven Spielberg and George Lucas's book. I'm a very fast reader, about 4,000 or 5,000 words a minute. And retention on biographies is like photographic. My wife says, how the hell do you know where that line was? And it's always highlighted and circled and starred and underlined and exclamation mark. Yeah, I don't know. I just got that talent. That's one of my invisible talents, right? You couldn't tell by looking at me. Some people go, chicken soup. I said, thank you. I get that when I tell people I write. Anyhow, so what happened is I read that and they said they made $800 million on ET, but $1.5 billion licensing. I go to Jack, then we met 3 times a week when we weren't talking. And I said, we're going to license. He said, what do you know about it? I said, nothing. He said, then what makes you think we can do it? I said, look, Bucky, when I was getting my degrees, Bucky taught us general systems theory. If it's the system is a circle and you're in the circle, you know everything, or you're out of the circle, you don't know anything. But in 1 year of study, read every book in the business, meet everybody in the business, go to every meeting in the business, listen to all the videos on YouTube, like what we're doing on movies now. There's not a major story in movies that we don't understand and who's who and what they played and how much money they made, how much they lost. My wife and I have been very scholarly for the last 5 years because we said we're going to become Crystal Mark Entertainment. We're going to be a big movie company because these books are way too important not to put into film and docuseries and documentaries and all that. Anyhow, so I go to the meeting. I find out who the number one person is in licensing. I go to her and she bought the story. She said, I really like your story. Anyhow, we did 101 products. But the biggest, why everyone's got to think about licensing, including you and everyone watching, is it's a clean, neat business that you do from afar and there's no downside. If you can build yourself big enough in whatever and then trademark it and do it as a license, like the dog food people came to us and I told you my little daughter was becoming a vet and we had all these beautiful dogs and they said, we want to do a Chicken Soup for the Soul dog food, which I inspired them to say that. And then I said, well, it's got to be 4 things. Number one, the dogs have to like it because I just did the meeting with Jay Leno and Purina and they had the number one packaging, the number one placement, number blah, 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 blah. And the next year month it went because the dogs didn't like it. So the dogs have got to like it. Number one, we're going to test on my 4 dogs. Got it? Number two, it's got to be organic and it's got to be really healthy and no insecticides, pesticides, Roundup, all that crap that we even put in human beings can't exist. It's not, if so, because I run 100% of licensing. Jack does zero. I ran it. I said, it isn't, because Jack didn't believe in it at the front end. He goes, this is, boy, you know, you have nutso ideas, but this is nuts. You think you can make this? I said, well, we're both getting paid, so I think you better support me, you know? Yeah. So anyhow, we did $157 million worth of dog food. We get 15%. You don't have to package it to have returns. We had a little booklet in every one of them. So, you know, chicken soup for the dog lover sold. Then we did chicken soup for the cat lover sold. Then we humma. And that's in sequel and prequel. So what happens is you have to have big ideas, and then you got to keep studying. Now I'm selling, but you got to do the biographies in your industry. There are biographies in every industry. If you don't know all the people who've been before you, how's that? Your ancestors, you missed it. Like when I started this publishing house, I said, look, I'm with Random House, and the guys at Random House didn't know who started it. I said, oh man, right? I went to my dinner. Okay, who started Random House? I know this. Who started Random House? I didn't know I knew it, but I thought, tell my mind I know it. And my mind went, Bennett, do you even know that name? Bennett Cerf.
Bennett Cerf. No, I'm not familiar.
Mm-mm. You're not old enough. That's why. Because Bennett Cerf, when I was a little kid in the late 50s, started What's My Line. And what happened is all these people came on What's My Line. A guy named Ernest.
I remember that.
Yeah, Ernest Hemingway came on. A guy, I got to interview him. The guy who wrote all the books like Hawaii and Colorado and James Michener. And he took them when nobody would take them. And he wrote a book called At Random. Well, it's a big, big book. And I immediately ordered it. It was obsolete, but I immediately went through every old thing and found a copy. I read every word. I highlighted it. I said, if Bennett Cerf were alive, he and I'd be best friends, number one. Number two is I'm doing what he did, and I'm doing what he's did, and I'm leveraging it. You gotta read biographies. It's not, in my mind, all these guys say, I learned everything I need to know on TikTok. You are I got to be careful. Somebody in TikTok's going to watch this and go, no, the idiot's you, Mark. No, you can't learn. Bennett Cerf gave me a lifetime of almost 100 years of wisdom in a book that it was well read when he was alive, but he's dead 50 years or something. And why wouldn't I want to know that?
Right.
Why wouldn't, I don't care what field, whether it's hockey, you know, if I was playing basketball, like for my grandson, who's a basketball superstar, I can talk about that if you want to hear that. But I bought him every book on Michael Jordan, and he knows every number of every basket and everybody. I mean, I had a basketball signed by Larry, what the guy at Boston Celtics. Anyhow, I gave it to my grandson. He bought a glass case because he babysits houses when people are vacationing in a rich neighborhood for $20, waters the plants, take care of the dog, make sure the grass is cut, and has their cell phone number so you can call them when they're down wherever they're vacationing in the Caribbean or where, Hawaii or whatever. And he ended up having so much, he's making thousands a month, plus he plays basketball every day and is number one in class and president of the student body. So I said, you could be president. He said, oh, Grampy, I'm too young. I can't be president.
Oh, that's too funny. Now, what matters the most? Is it the message, the timing, or the distribution?
Oh, another question I've never heard. I think the front end is a message. I think you got to work out the distribution. And now, because we're going into film business, we're interviewing everybody and everybody's interviewing us. I'll just say that we, one of the books we're doing is for the guy who ran Microsoft innovation for 25 years and then went on his own and did really great stuff. But he created the product for a company called Roku. And Roku was invented by this guy and Anthony Wood for Netflix, and Netflix didn't see the benefit. And I thought, oh, damn. I said, you better have a board of directors and advisors if you do, because here, I want to tell you what happened in a second, but it's what happened. Steve Jobs goes to Kodak and they invented pictures digitally. And he said, you didn't patent it? George Eastman's guy said, no, we didn't patent it. He said, hot diggity dom. And now we do 1 trillion pictures a year in cell phones. It's probably higher than that, but that's the last number I got. If it's higher, I don't, I can't tell you, but I take a lot of, oops, I didn't take a picture of us yet, which I try to keep it. And that way I know exactly where I've been, because that's the only way that I can time control my life. How does that grab you? But is because I can look back and say, oh, that's when Stace and I were together. So Roku and We Talk, they have 500 million subscribers now, more than Netflix, number one. Number two, they have 120 million a day watch 4 hours or more a day. And what they want is more content. And what I am is, they're the king of distribution. That's not even a question in my mind, but they want me to bring be a king of content and queen with my wife, because we, you know, we love them, they love us. They didn't know I existed until this guy who's I'm writing a book with introduces. That's why you gotta, back to the message, your inner ear has to be open all the time. Because whatever message you're looking for, you resonate with. And I'm resonating right now with who are the best distribution and where is the future distribution? Because digital in movies is up 70%. Movie theaters are down 70%. Mm-hmm. Well, you want to go to the future or the past? You know, I was with Bucky Fuller. I'm a futurist. Not even a question, a comprehensive futurist like Fuller taught me to be. And I thought, yeah. And they want us, we want them. And my cliche is whatever you're looking for is looking for you. But most of us don't look deep enough, because seek and you'll find. But if you seek, back to your question, and I know it's taking me 360 degrees to a question, but you know, you probably don't even remember the question. But the point is, you got to seek it, but you got to seek deep. You can't seek super, I just want to make $1 million. Well, I teach you how to do that here. So that's not hard, but you got to do the work and you got to study it and know the principles of leverage and principles of compounding and all those principles. They're easy. But if you don't know them, you get robbed. Whoops, I want to use a word. Because you're naive and the other person's not.
Right. Oh, very true. Very true. Now, what was the turning point moment where you knew it had traction?
First of all, in the speaking business, I knew it had traction because that guy, Tony, Big Tony, gave me a directory and they go. and the benefit there was, I'll just do it real quick. You know that I'm not recommending McDonald's, but McDonald's pays all this money to find out where to place. And what do? They do a Taco Bell next to it, and they do next to that the food, right? Because mom says, I don't want to eat a McDonald's again. I'll go to Taco Bell, right? Or whatever mom says, because mom runs the food for kids generally. Same thing, insurance business. When I went into the building, like when I'm trying to make $100,000 a year 50 years ago, which was big, that's $250, 250 work times $400, $100,000. And when I got to the top salesman, he said, look, Mark, you love your daughters. Would making $1 million a year is only a zero. I said, I'm sorry. Ben Feldman is his name. He was on the cover of every magazine. And Ben said, look, if your daughter's life depended, can you make $4,000 tomorrow? I said, I'd figure it out. He said, well, figure it out. And then just do it 250 times. Because it's 4,000 a day times 250 work days is $1 million. I thought, wow. And I started making $1 million a year, because easier to make $1 million than 100,000. And it's easier tenfold than the one or twofold, because twofold means you're going to work harder and you'll exhaust. But tenfold means, back to your question, is that you've had a change of mind. So obviously I changed my mind and figured out how to charge more. And then I also sold stuff. And what I started to do with the biographies is every one of the billionaires that we're interviewing books on, and there's lots of them now, is they all figure out how to get paid twice for the same job. Like in the book business, I got paid a nice fee of, I start out, as I told you, $25 a seminar. Now I get $35,000 domestically and $75,000 international. And if I go international, I got to do three in a row, or my wife and I aren't going. It just, you know, I don't have to. So unless they really want me, I don't want to go. But then we also sell product on top of that and get paid. So we're getting paid twice. And if I take any consultancy jobs, then we're getting paid three times. This guy who's building the biggest thing here took us on a vacation with him, and his, long story short, but flying private all the way up to Canada. And then he bought a 4,000 acre ranch, a wood farm, because he wanted to harvest the wood. He knew they needed it in Vancouver. And what happened is it cost $8,000 for a ship to come in, but they needed a place to put dirt, and he could put the dirt in his gravel pits. He had one gravel pit, found out from a guy next door. He had eight gravel pits. So he said, I shipped the gravel down on top of the gravel. I put the logs, and then they shipped the dirt back. I get paid three times on one job. Is that cool?
That is cool.
But the average person says, well, I just made $8,000 on a ship going one way. No, you dumb idiot. You ought to comprehensively. Let's get the whole deal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's one of my best friends now, and he calls every day saying, I thought I had the biggest business ever, but now I got the biggest business. I go, I don't want to name him because the book's not ready yet, but you'll want to buy it immediately, and you will when it comes out. He's already up to 800 pages. I said, I got to break it into three books because most people can't read an 800 page book. They get afraid of it. So we got to keep it about 100 pages or a little less.
I love that. I love that. Now, what did you do that most creators don't do?
Wow, there's another question I've never ever heard. You give me about a dozen these today. Real creators, like with Bob Allen and I, when we wrote this, we created multiple streams of income. Before that, with Bob Proctor, I created multiple sources of income. I think they have multiple ideas simultaneously, and they keep them in their own journal. This journal's obviously got my name on it, but you know, there's like a $50 journal and you go buy it. But I'm not trying to sell journals. I used to, but I don't sell journals now. Anyhow, and you got to keep all the notes of all the stuff you could do. And I got 50 years of journals, and you need to write down 10 things you want to do every day, 10 new things every day. Mm-hmm. That compounds it very, because what happens is they start to cross-pollinate. And pretty soon, like we needed to get with somebody in the film business. And I called somebody down in Nashville, and I won't name their names, but I wanted to get with them. And I said, I'm never, you know, most people are 5 to 6 people away from somebody. I'm one, usually. Yeah. And we called 3 or 4 and none of them could get me to the people I wanted. But then all of a sudden I thought, wow, this guy had me on media. He knows everybody in Nashville. So I called him, and sure enough, he said, not only do I know them, but here's what's happening with them now. And you need to know that. And we're going to talk to them later today. So it's a fascinating, you know, in one call, the right call, you can get the right person with the right idea and get the right result.
Right. It's so true. It's so true. You know, when if you have the right connections and you know the right people, one call, that's all you need, and not being afraid to ask, and you know, and that can lead you in a really good direction and really help you with, you know, solving the issue and get into where you want to go to in life for sure. I just wanted to ask you about your book, The Ask, you know, that, you know, basically, you know, The Ask is the book really that changes everything. You know, you're known for teaching people on how to ask. You're the most, you know, don't, you know, the most, that most people are terrified to ask, you know, they hint, they hope, they wait, but the, you know, the worst thing that could happen is someone says no. And, well, you know,
so far that's never killed you, or I hasn't.
You know, why are people so afraid to ask for what they want?
Because they predispose that they're going to get a no, and the no is going to hurt them, and it's going to kill them. And it doesn't kill you. That's the point. So you got to erase that. But I, back to your statement, everyone needs to ask The Bridge from Your Dreams, Your Destiny by Crystal Amark. It starts with the fable of Michaela, which is what we're making into a movie, which said, Crystal, my wife, has these prophetic dreams that are beyond spiritual, and everyone who reads it gets goosebumps, and they go, that's my story. And that's the point you've got behind your head. Yeah. Everyone's got a story. Your story is your life. Your story is your house. Your story is the home that you're building into the future. But you, when you start to look at other stories, you see, am I going to the right direction, or am I going to the wrong direction? Am I going to my highest, best, noblest, and most important level of service that I could do? Because when the game's over, you're going to look back and you go through it really in a nanosecond, evidently, because there is no time and space on the other side, which is really a hard concept to buy. Yeah. Very esoteric, very spiritual, but true. I mean, God doesn't have time. You know, you and I have time because we created it, because we needed to, whatever.
Right. Very true. Now, I just wanted to ask you, like, what's the biggest ask that you were afraid to make in your life?
I'm going to answer different than you expect. I haven't made it yet. How's that?
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that answer.
Yeah, because we're asking for a lot of money. I mean, you know, we were bought, our Fable of Michaela was bought here by PureFlix. Long story, and I won't go into it. They offered $4 million, but they had the wrong producer. They had a guy that does only horror. I don't do horror. I don't even go to horror movies. I think horror movies are horrible for me, for they hurt your state of mind and state of being, as far as I'm concerned. But there's a big market for it, but that's not a market I want. And so hard for me to believe I'd ever get back $4 million. But now we're going to get, we need, we think, to make this, and we're probably going to make it in Morocco or Istanbul or Canary Islands, because we need, it's set in 1544 and it's, you know, we need castles and all that stuff, and you just don't want to have to build that. So we need at least 10 million, and then we've written three, my wife's written three screenplays. So, you know, we need 30 million. So that's a pretty big ask, but we're doing it. And it appears that a few people are saying they're in, they haven't given us the money yet. But if that's true, that happens. And if that's true, we started our empire in movies, just like Chicken Soup, but it'll be bigger than big, because we're coming, the stories we have are just, they're too good not to share.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Now, what happens in when someone in someone's life, when they start to ask boldly?
They get stronger, bigger, smarter, and their life increases. They become, they, back to what you said, they have more meaning, more purpose, more impact. And that's why you're really here. You're not here to mumble through life. Well, I had a job and now I'm 65 and now I can retire and I'm going to play pinochle or bridge or whatever every day. I don't think so. I mean, not that, that I'm not trying to make somebody retire wrong, but I wrote a book with a book letter on retirement, how to make the rest of your life the best of your life. And we said, look, don't retire. Go from here to somewhere better. Put on new tires. Go in a new direction. Figure out what you really want to do, because you want to do something and you're afraid to do it. Back to your bigger question, last question, is that you're here full time to overcome your fears.
Right.
Dispel your fear and make it disappear, because fear does you no good. And it does you a lot of harm. It causes disease, sickness, depression, low levels of success, self-limitation. I've never said it that way before, but I'm sure all that's pretty correct. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It is true. It is
I
true.
I edit myself even when I'm talking, and you go, boy, I wonder, do I agree with that tomorrow?
Now, what's one ask everybody should make this month?
No, everyone should ask every day, what did I do today to make God smile?
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love that.
And then the other one we've got in the book, we get 128 asks for you to memorize, but the size of your ask determines the size of your result. Mm-hmm. So if you ask how I'm going to sell 100 books, you'll sell 100. I asked how to sell 1.5 million in a year and a half. We figured it out. And then 5 million and then 10 million and then 15 million a year, which as far as I know, no one else ever wrote that down and asked that question. So I did a whole set, how to think bigger than you ever thought. You could think a book and a set of tapes, audios that are online and all that at Kindle, everywhere else, and narrated by me. But the point is, you got to ask big, because the world's waiting for you. And you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for all the people you're going to help.
Right. Exactly.
Service, product, or idea, they need it.
They do. They do. Now, a lot of people aren't stuck. They are playing small because it feels safe. Mark, you've helped millions of people. My question to you is, what makes the best way to spot where you're thinking too small?
Just look at your results. And by the way, thinking too small and thinking safe is going to crash you and burn. And what it does is, if you're not growing, then you're dying. And if you're dying, you're dying for yourself. But remember, you affect, whether you know it or not, 250 people, right? All you got to do is go to the average funeral, 250 people. Go to the average wedding, 250 people. I mean, other than people that elope and run away to Vegas or whatever that story is. But we're talking about the real minority. I got two friends who own wedding chapels, and it's always 250 show up.
Right. Now, my final question to you is, if someone is listening and feels behind, rejected, stuck, or they feel like they've missed their chance, what would you tell them in one sentence?
All you got to do is believe. Stacy and I believe more in you than you believe in yourself. And now go get rid of all that self-limiting garbage, because it's doing you no good, the world no good. And you're going to get a short end of the stick, because you will not have done what you're here to do. And what I teach is, you got to earn your money freedom, so you can buy your time freedom, so you can have your relationship freedom and hang with the people you want to hang with, which I lovingly do. And then you get your, be passionately on purpose about what you're supposed to do. Like, I don't have to work for a long time. And I love to work. I love waking up. I love doing this interview with you. I love that. I came up with some new ideas again this morning because I write them out just like I teach you guys to do today during a seminar or podcast. And I know that they're going to flourish and they're going to serve some people in ways that nobody else can serve. But I'm not here alone. Stacy's not here alone. We need you to come up to whatever you're supposed to come up to. And you've been living below your privilege is what I think we're saying on this show. We want you to throw off, take the bushel off, let your little light shine.
100%. And that hit home because I think a lot of people, you know, think that. And I think you've given them the knowledge and the inspiration today to really, you know, take that step forward and break through those fears and just go and be who they really want to be and make that purpose that a reality for them. You know, Mark Victor Hansen, thank you so much for being here and for being so generous with the truth. And this conversation shifted somebody in our audience. Follow the show because we don't just talk about success here. We break down what it takes to actually create it. And before we go, Mark, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the conversation that we haven't touched base on?
Yeah, go to askthebook.com. It's free and there's all that good stuff, free videos and all that. So if you can't afford the book, you can get it at a library. But if you don't want to do that, you can watch it online. Number two is that if you're going to write a book, go to markvictorhansenlibrary.com. And if you know you're in a position that we get to serve you and we want what you got and you want what we got, we'd love to help you. Those two things.
I love that. And you do have courses too. So you have courses available for people. They can find that on your website as well.
Yep. And we're making more. So we're not done. I think I know more now than I've ever known. So, and the people are saying that. And even the people in the studio go, my God, I didn't know any of that. And they don't, especially the young kids that are filming me nowadays. They go, you sold me on reading. I said, well, look, Jim Rowan says, if you can read and don't, you're no better than somebody who can't. So you guys cannot learn everything on Instagram or TikTok or any one of those channels. It's not there.
Yeah. It's all shallow.
And you're not here to be shallow.
Right. Very true. Very true. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show. I loved having you and I hope you'll be back. And I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
All right. You have a great day.
Thank you.
Borough Talks, the Borough Market podcast is back. We've got a brilliant lineup for you this series. We've got Elliot Hashtrudy talking all things offal at his amazing restaurant Camille. Brindisi's Monica Linton sharing her thoughts on the evolution of British cuisine. And the founders of Genki talking all things matcha. All of this plus chats about the future of British cheese and the unique flavours of one of Italy's lesser known regions. That's Borough Talks, the Borough Market podcast. Follow on Spotify today.